A True History of the Universe. Once upon a time, there was nothing. The end. Everything is nothing, with a twist. A quote by Kurt Vonnegut. Have you ever wondered, why is there something rather than nothing? This is the ultimate question. If you could answer this question, and that's a big if, you would have the answer to all of existence, making this question rather important. The problem is that philosophers and theologians and scientists have been asking this question for thousands of years, and probably even long before that, since humans first walked on the earth and could think and could formulate questions at all. We probably started asking this question. But the challenge is that we have thousands of years of philosophy recorded in the history books and so forth, but no clear consensus as to what the answer is. And in fact, most of us today, if you talk to a scientist or even a philosopher today or a theologian or just a normal guy off the street, you ask him this question, what's he going to tell you? He's going to tell you it's impossible to know. Nobody knows. And nobody could know. And it's not worth your time to even think about it anymore. Because, hey, if it could be known, we would know it by now, right? At least, that's what most people assume. Well, I'm here to break some amazing news to you. It's actually possible to answer this question clearly, precisely, definitively, once and for all. Not as a belief, not as an ideology, not as speculation, not as theory, but the actual answer. But the trick, as you might expect, is that the answer is so profound that it's going to stretch the capabilities of your mind to understand it. So that's where we're going to have to go kind of slow and kind of work through it here. And then you're also going to have to do some additional work on your own beyond just watching this recording to really understand what I'm talking about. But I can guide you towards this answer. I've arrived at it myself, not as a belief, but as something you can become directly conscious of. And it's a hell of an answer. It's really worth understanding. So, how come there's something rather than nothing? Before I give you the answer, we first need to appreciate the significance of this question. See, a lot of people, they'll just ask these sorts of questions very willy-nilly without appreciating the gravity and significance and the scope, the enormity, the profundity of the question and the accompanying answer. So what's important when you're contemplating reality in general, and there's lots of different aspects of reality that you could contemplate, when you contemplate reality, it's important that your mind gets what I call traction with the problem or with the question at hand. Because you can ask questions just kind of like flippantly, without being serious about it. And then you can ask questions in such a way where your mind is really on track with it. So let's get your mind there right now. So what I want you to do is I want you to take your awareness and your consciousness and to turn it inwards towards yourself, because usually it's oriented outwards. So take that consciousness inwards. So kind of focus it inside your skull, into your eyes, into your head, into your deepest sense of self. Do this along with me. When you do that, then I want you to just focus your consciousness on the fact that anything at all exists, that you exist, that this room that you're sitting in exists, that this body here exists, that noises and sounds exist, that colors exist. I mean, this is clearly what is happening in your experience, is that you have these things. So just focus your consciousness on the fact that anything exists at all and just try to wonder it how amazing and mysterious that is. It might help you to look at your hands. It helps me when I'm doing this exercise to look at my hands and to just wonder, how come these hands are here? How come they exist? How is it possible that anything exists at all? Are you doing this? Can you feel, when you do this, can you feel that sense of like wonder and awe and mystery at the fact that your hand exists right here? How is that possible? Why is there a hand? Why is it not a tentacle? Why is it not some claw? Why is it not nothingness? Connect with that deep sense of wonder. This is crucial. This is what I mean by your mind gaining traction with the question. And also, your mind has to be open here. So be careful about your mind quickly supplying you with some sort of pre-made narrative that you got from society or from your culture, whether it's from religion or from science or from your parents or from some videos you watched on YouTube or whatever. See, the mind will tend to come in and quickly the mind will want to dispel the mystery and the wonder. It'll want to kind of plug that empty hole with some sort of narrative. Like it'll want to say something, well, this hand is here because my mom and my dad got together 30 years ago. They had sex. There was a sperm and egg. They met. That turned into a zygote. That the cells multiplied. Then that turned into a little baby. And then that grew up. And then 30 years later, here I am. And here's the hand. So you could explain it like that, or your mind could explain it some other way, such as like, well, there was the Big Bang. The Big Bang was just like a bunch of molecules and then they formed. And then those molecules, they were swirling around in gas clouds. Those congealed into stars and then more gas clouds congealed into planets. And then one of those was the Earth. And then billions of years of evolution passed and there was fish and then there was amphibians, and then there was lizards, and then they crawled up onto land, and then they turned into mammals, and there were dinosaurs, and then the dinosaurs were killed by some asteroid, and then the mammals rose up, and then there were primates, and then those primates turned into chimpanzees, and we were an offshoot off those, and then came humans, and here I am. You could explain it like that. Or if you're a religious person, you could say, well, God created it all, something like that, some kind of story like that. So you have to resist all those narratives, you have to throw all those away, and you have to kind of start from scratch and just start with what's actually here in your direct experience. In your direct experience, there is no evolution, there is no Big Bang, there is no God, there is no, reptiles who turned into humans, there is no chimpanzees, there's only this, only what's here. So let's just work with that. So that opens up your mind. Now you're connected with the question. Now we can do this with our mind. We can conceive of a universe in which there would be nothing at all. So imagine reality that was completely nothing, absolute nothing. There was no planets, no animals, no plants, no molecules, no gas clouds, nothing at all. Just total blank. When we imagine this, it makes us wonder because we think like, well, that seems to be what reality ought to be, right? Because like, where did all this stuff come from? Wouldn't it be simpler if reality was just absolutely nothing? That would be so simple, right? Then there would be nothing to wonder about and nothing to explain. In a sense, what we have to explain, all this weird, complex, ordered stuff, if you haven't noticed, reality is very, very complex. It's filled with very specific ordered things. Everything is ordered so intricately within reality. Have you noticed this? That requires a sort of explanation. Why is it ordered that way, not some other way? Why is this a hand, not a claw or something? We have to explain that. But if it was absolutely nothing, it would require no explanation. And you would think like that would be the simplest solution. As a scientist, you might say, That's what reality really like ought to be, is just pure absolute nothing. That would be like the ultimate answer, right? Because if that was what reality was, then there wouldn't even be us to wonder about what reality is. It would be so nothing, there wouldn't even be one who is wondering about what it is. And then in a certain sense, that very nicely ties all the loose ends together such that there aren't even loose ends because there's nothing. So there's not even loose ends to tie up. That's how elegant that solution is, right? But we have a problem. Even though that seems to be like the most efficient way for reality to be. Can you see how that's sort of like a, if we think of it as a scientist, you know, scientists like to think in terms of like maximization of energy efficiency. It seems to create all of this, to create planets and stars and all this, you need so much energy. Where's this energy coming from? Why is this energy arising in the first place? Wouldn't it just be simpler to have nothing? And if we had this nothing, it would be perfectly symmetrical. It would be perfectly even everywhere. It would just be pure nothing forever. We wouldn't need to answer tricky questions about time travel, about space, about the curvature of space, about different dimensions, about a bunch of different quarks and particles and strings and all this complex stuff. Like, we would just simplify everything so much if it was absolute nothing. But of course, the problem is that it's not, at least not in the way we conventionally think of it. In the way we think of it, it's something. There's all this something that's going on. So why this and not that? But here's the trick. How do you know how to distinguish between something and nothing? How do you know that your mind's ability to make that distinction is itself something you can rely on, something that's valid, something that's objectively true, and not merely something that's perspectival or relativistic? Uh-huh, see that? Now we're getting to the rub. What if the difference between something and nothing was actually relativistic? Something that you were projecting onto reality and not something fundamental to reality itself. What if reality itself didn't know the difference between something and nothing? And what if this current state that we're in that we call something is actually more energy efficient? It's lower in energy than absolute nothing. How could that be? Well, consider. If we have absolute nothing, what would keep absolute nothing from spontaneously spawning into something? What would prevent it? Nothing. There's nothing preventing nothing from turning into something. So while it seems that absolute nothing is the most energy efficient state, it's perfectly symmetrical. Actually, it's not symmetrical, because to have absolute emptiness without any form, without somethingness, that you can see is an asymmetry. It's a bias. In a sense, what you're doing is you're kind of saying that, you know, we're pushing reality to be just this way, but not this way. So, see, what would be pushing reality to be one way rather than another way? That's the whole trick here, is to start to understand this. That there is nothing holding reality back from being any particular way. So, in a sense, we could think of it like this. If reality was absolute blank nothing, since there's nothing stopping nothing from turning into something, nothing becomes something. But since there's no time yet, because time is something, and this is happening in nothing, there's no time, there's no space, there's no nothing. So, because those are all somethings, space, time, these are somethings. So if there is nothing to begin with, and then there's nothing holding back nothing, it spawns into something, generating everything that we know of, and that this happens instantaneously. This is not a process that happens through time or through space. This happens instantaneously. So much so that there's literally no distinction between nothing and something. Such that as I'm sitting here speaking to you right now, and you are sitting there listening to me, actually, all of this that's been happening here in this recording and happening right now is literally nothing. So nothing is precisely what exists. But nothing is not as you've imagined some pure blankness. Nothing and something, because they're indistinguishable, because the distinction between them is relativistic and purely a projection of your mind, actually, they unify into a singularity such that this is nothing. And so your entire life and the entire physical universe, in a sense, we could say, never even happened. It's nothing, it's nowhere, it's no when, and it's no how. Ta-da! And that explains the whole universe. It's a perfect symmetry, you see. Because if it was purely something, that would be an asymmetry. If it was purely nothing, that would also be an asymmetry. If it was any particular way, it would be an asymmetry and it would be some bias that we have to explain somehow. We would have to come up with an explanation for, well, why would the universe be this way and not that way? Why that way and not this way? Well, the answer is that it's always possible superimposed into each other and into an infinite singularity. So what everything is just infinity. But infinity is identical to nothing. Because something is nothing. Because if you take a circle of a certain diameter and you shrink this circle to zero diameter circle. So what happens? Can you imagine what happens if we take a circle and we start to shrink it until it turns to zero diameter? At that exact moment when the diameter becomes perfectly zero, can you see how there's an inflection point where the circle instantly inflates and becomes identical to a circle of infinite diameter? So actually, there's no difference between a circle of infinite diameter and zero diameter, which is why zero and infinity are identical. See, yeah, it's twisted. It twists your mind. The problem is that our mind is wired to think in dualities. And one of the most fundamental dualities we have is that of nothing and something. But the nature of reality is such that everything is non-dual and all dualities ultimately collapse. Have you wondered, for example, what the boundary is between nothing and something? What is that boundary made out of? So in reality, let's say this is reality right here, right? We have something like this, and then we can imagine nothing. Like maybe you imagine outside the universe, there's nothing. If we go to the edge of the universe, there's nothing, you might imagine. But what would the boundary between the something of the universe and the nothing outside the universe, what would that boundary be made out of? Would that boundary be made out of something or nothing? You see, when you really think this through, you realize there can't be a boundary. Because all boundaries themselves are nothing. And that there's no difference between something and nothing. And when that boundary collapses, you could say that, well, that means the universe extends out forever. There's no nothing out there. But the converse is also true. It means that the nothingness extends forever. So the universe could extend forever in that way. The somethingness extends forever, let's say, in that way, from the center. From the center, it radiates outward. But you could also say that the nothingness radiates inward from the outside. See? So what that means is that the nothingness that we're supposedly thinking the universe exists inside of isn't actually something that the universe came out of, but something that the universe actually is. So what I'm saying here is not merely that, like some scientists say, that the Big Bang came out of nothing. And there are some reputable scientists who make these claims. I think Stephen Hawking was one of them. I read in one of his books where he talked about how, you know, it would be very elegant if the universe came out of nothing, because that would sort of like neatly tie up all the questions. But that's still not quite right. What I'm saying here is not that the universe came from nothing. What I'm saying is that the universe is nothing, has always been nothing, and will always be nothing. Because something and nothing are completely indistinguishable. And that the only distinction we're making between the two is simply a function of our own mind projecting that out onto the world. So what this means is that everything that's happening right now in this moment, I'm sitting here talking, you're sitting there listening to me, this, all of this, even though we've conventionally called this something, actually it's nothing. It's as though it's not even happening, even though, of course, it feels as though it's happening. So to really understand this, you have to think so fundamentally here, so existentially here, that you have to realize that when you were born as a child, or at least you imagine you were, think back to how did your concepts of something and nothing originate? Where did those come from? How did you learn to distinguish between something and nothing? What if those concepts themselves are what is flawed in your worldview? See, in a sense, your whole worldview hinges upon this, these very fundamental distinctions you made as a little child to make sense of the world. But who told you what nothing is, and who told you what something is? How did you define those terms? Huh? Think about this. Like, really think about this. Get some traction on this with your mind. What if everything you pointed to and called something, and your parents did this for you, you know, your mom points at a ball and she says, that's something. And then she points at a dog and she says, that's something. And then she points at something else and she says, that's nothing. Like, maybe she points at an empty space and says, that's nothing. And then your mind sort of creates this distinction between somethings and nothings. But what if when your mom pointed at a ball and told you that that's something, and when your mom pointed at a dog and told you that that's something, what if she was wrong and you were wrong for believing her, and actually that entire time she was pointing at nothing? But you mistook that nothing for something. Can you sort of undo this move that your mind made when you were a child? Go back, undo that, and now look at this room that you're sitting in. I want you to look around it, and I want you to realize that everything you see around you is precisely what nothing looks like. This is the crucial mistake that every philosopher, theologian, and scientist has made for thousands of years. It's such a simple, yet such a profound mistake. Is that they assumed, all of them assumed, and you assumed, that what nothing is a blank black hole or void. When I say nothing, your mind thinks of some black hole. But that's not nothing. First of all, that's something. A black hole is something. Blackness is something. A void is still something. How would you even think of true nothing? Actual nothing. Actual nothing can't be thought of, because if you think of it, that's something. See? But anyways, the mistake is that you're trying to imagine this nothing as something different than what is right here, right now, which you have called something. That's the mistake. And the resolution to this whole challenge is just the realization that this right here is nothing. So look at your hands and realize that they're nothing. Look at my face. Look at my body. Hear my voice. Hear the sounds in your room. Maybe the air conditioning is blowing. Maybe some birds are chirping. Maybe sunlight is shining through the windows. Or maybe it's dark outside. You're looking through the window. You're seeing some tree or whatever. Some moths circling around a light. Whatever you're seeing. All of that. Recognize it as nothing. Notice how your mind has been tricking you your entire life. You've been calling all of this something this entire time when it was really nothing. This is what nothing looks like. This is actual nothing. Not some imaginary nothing, actual nothing. Actual nothing has colors. Actual nothing talks. Actual nothing hears. Actual nothing is a bird flying through the air, chirping. Actual nothing is pain in your leg that's been bothering you. Actual nothing is a toothache. Actual nothing is your partner rejecting you. Actual nothing is your parents abusing you when you were a child. Actual nothing is what you see on TV as you're flipping through every channel. Actual nothing is every book that you flip through and read. That's actual nothing. It's indistinguishable from something. This is not really something you can think about and understand. This is not something you can believe or take on as an ideology. This is something you have to become directly conscious of. There will be a significant shift in your current experience of reality when you realize that something and nothing are identical. Your jaw will drop if you really understand what I'm saying here. This is an utterly radical realization. This is not just something like, oh yeah, it's some cool philosophy, but let's move on to the next video. No, this will stop your life dead in its tracks if you ever realize what I'm saying here. I distinctly remember the first time when I became fully conscious that everything is nothing. I was on a meditation retreat in Hawaii in a cabin in the jungle. I was sitting there late at night meditating and looking out the window, and I distinctly remember the moment where I realized I looked out the window. I saw the entire jungle as I was kind of like looking out. And I saw the room that I was in, kind of like looking through the room, through the window, out into the jungle. And I just realized that the entire thing was just nothing. As though none of it had ever happened. That's what the Zen masters call mu, M-U. The realization of mu, nothingness. See, you still might think that sort of a black void is a simpler, more energy efficient state for reality to be in than this state right here. That's actually not the case. Because something would have to just maintain that pure black void forever. Something would have to restrain it or hold it back. And actually what reality is it's purely unbiased and unrestricted, unlimited consciousness. So you're conscious right now, that's what reality is made of. The substance of reality is consciousness. Consciousness is nothing. And the trick to understand there is that if consciousness is allowed to be completely unlimited and unrestricted, it can't just be purely formless, because if it was purely formless, that would be a negation of form, which would actually be an asymmetry within consciousness. So for consciousness to truly be unlimited, it simultaneously has to limit itself and go from formless into form, such that there is no distinction between form and formlessness, such that the whole thing, you can think of the entire universe as just a singularity made up of both formlessness and form, all superimposed into each other at once, completely unlimited. Which includes this present moment that you're sitting here and experiencing right now. You think it's something. You think it came from somewhere. You think it's happening some when, during some time, some place in space, somehow through some method. All of this is an illusion. In fact, the present moment and the entire universe and all of reality is nothing, no when, no where, and no how. And this is why science and the human mind and the human intellect and rationality and logic struggle so much to answer metaphysical questions such as, why is there something rather than nothing? Because the analytical mind only works based upon certain premises and certain assumptions and certain fundamental distinctions, like the distinction between something and nothing, the distinction between something existing and non-existing, the distinction between something being logical and illogical, all these distinctions. But all of these are biases within consciousness. Reality can only exist precisely because it's perfectly symmetrical, such that it cancels itself out, thereby tying up every loose end, such that there's nothing left to explain, because it's completely self-contained. It's singular. It's one. It can have no boundary. It's just an infinite singularity of everything superimposed on top of itself into a perfect unity, a perfect symmetry. And this is, once you understand this, you realize that this is the most energy efficient state, and that this is the only state that reality could be in, and this is the only way that anything could exist at all, is if it's part of this singular, unified supersymmetry, where everything perfectly cancels itself out. Such that we could say that none of it even exists. Are you getting this? I have a demonstration for you to illustrate this point. So here we have a glass. And then here we have a second glass. So how many empty glasses am I holding up? Of course, it's a trick question. I'm holding up two empty glasses. But how could they both be empty when this one seems full? This one is obviously empty. But can you see that the way that we define what full is actually an incomplete definition? Because if you look at this glass, yes, we could say it's full, but what does it really mean to say that this glass is full? When we truly understand fullness, fullness is such that it must include emptiness within it. So obviously, this full glass, just because it has water in it, can you see how it still has the empty glass inside of it? It's like there. You can sort of just picture it with your mind's eye. So when we really say full, we can sort of have two definitions of full. We can have a relativistic definition of full, which is full like this, like the conventional sense of full, which is opposite of empty. This is sort of a duality. Or we can have a more holistic understanding and definition of the word full. This would be fullness with a capital F. This would be fullness as an absolute. This is a fullness which includes and encompasses the emptiness within it as well. See? So when you're able to see this glass as empty, only then have you understood what fullness truly means. Because how can something be truly full if it excludes the empty? You see how that duality must collapse. It must go full circle. Likewise, try to apply that to your present experience. What I'm talking about here is not just some abstract philosophy or theory. I'm talking about your direct experience. I want you to look for the first time in your life at this present moment that's happening right now and to realize that it's completely empty. You've been looking at it as though it was that full, conventionally full glass. And now what I'm asking you to do is I'm asking you to look at this glass. I'm asking you to look at this present moment and to realize a higher order of fullness, a fullness which is so full that it goes full circle and it recognizes the emptiness that permeates through this entire experience and this glass. So even though this glass looks like somethingness, actually it's nothingness. Even though this glass looks like form, actually it's also formless at the same time. You see? The problem is that the human mind is very biased towards survival. It has to be. Otherwise, it couldn't exist. For your mind to be here thinking about this stuff, it had to worry about survival its whole life. Otherwise, it would be dead. So your mind is very biased towards form, to the exclusion of formlessness. Your mind benefits materially from form because all material benefit is of the formed variety. Money, sex, power, pleasure, these are all forms. What good is formlessness to you? Formlessness is not pleasurable. You can't use it to buy a vacation. You can't use it to have sex. You can't use it to live in it, like a nice luxury house. What can you do with formlessness? Seems like nothing. So you might wonder, well, what's the use then? What's the point? Why should we care about formlessness? Exactly, which is why most people don't care about formlessness. But the cost you pay for thinking that way is now you're stuck in the domain of form and you're only understanding half of reality. Because form is only half of reality. The other half is formlessness. And even though I'm talking about them as though they're two things, actually they're perfectly identical. So it's not like there's a world of formlessness that you're missing out there. No, the world of formlessness is precisely the world of form. It's right here. But you're just missing that way of seeing reality. You're only seeing form for its form, but you're missing its formlessness. And therefore, in your mind, you've created this sort of split where there's the world of form here, and then the world of formlessness is some abstract philosophical thing that maybe you could reach after thousands of hours of enlightenment work and meditation and whatever else. You think the world of formlessness is somewhere else to reach. It's precisely here. You're not going to reach it elsewhere. You're going to only find it here because it's identical. Where formlessness is hiding is directly under the form. In the same way that with this glass, where is the empty glass hiding? Why can't you see the empty glass? Precisely because it's inside the full glass. It's obscured because it's identical to it, right underneath it. In a sense, you're standing on top of the rug that you need to pull out from under yourself. See, it goes in a circle. When you understand this, everything is perfectly explained. There are no more questions about the nature of reality. Because you realize it's nothing. You realize that it didn't come from anywhere because nothing has always been nothing. It's eternally nothing, and it will always be nothing. It can't come from somewhere else because there's nowhere to come from since it's singular. It exists only in one place, which is nowhere. And it exists outside of time. And there's not even a process or method by which it comes into existence because all processes and methods are, again, dualities that need to be collapsed. And so in this way, it's possible for you, with direct consciousness, to become perfectly aware of the origin and nature of all of reality and your own self. And that's a pretty cool possibility. See, most people don't think this is possible, but it is. You're going to have to work at it. It's not going to be enough for you just to listen to me here. You're going to have to really work at it to realize this one day. But this is a good place to get you started. And I think the most important thing I want to just have you take away here is just the fact that these sorts of questions of like, why is there something rather than nothing? These are not purely philosophical questions that are impractical and have no answers. They seem that way, which is why most people don't pursue them seriously. And they never discover the amazing answers that can be arrived at if you pursue this stuff seriously. How do you know that what I'm telling you is true? Not by believing me. For all you know, I could be lying. I could be deluded. I could be a cult leader, whatever. The only way you'll know if what I'm telling you is true is by actually doing these exercises and by becoming directly conscious of it for yourself. And I hope one day you do. Your jaw will drop. Now you might wonder, but Leo, if all of this is nothing, what about other stuff you've talked about, like consciousness and love and truth and God? Where are these things? Well, all these things are identical. Nothing is consciousness. Nothing is truth. Nothing is love. Nothing is God. And nothing is you. All those things are identical. It will probably take you multiple awakenings and profound realizations and epiphanies in order to connect all and equate all of those different terms together. So maybe one time you have an awakening into the nature of this present moment as being nothing. That's great. But that still won't be the end of it. Then you'll need to have another awakening to realize that consciousness is nothing. Then you'll need to have another awakening to realize that love is identical to nothing. Then you'll need to have another realization to realize that God is identical to nothing. And then maybe you need to have another realization to realize that you are identical to God and to love and to consciousness and to nothing. And so the full awakening is when you equate all those terms together and then it becomes your living reality. It's not just something that you're thinking about, but it's something like, literally, I've had moments where I'm walking down the street for a stroll through the park, looking at a tree. As I'm walking by the tree, I'm conscious that this tree is nothing. It feels like walking through a hologram, almost. When this happens, it almost becomes as though all of reality becomes a hologram. It has this hollow quality to it. This is what the Buddhists call emptiness. Reality is fundamentally empty. It feels hollow. So right now, you might, you know, as a conventional human, you might look at a wall, a brick wall. You might look at a car. You might look at a tree. You might look at, you know, you might tap something hard, like a wood table. You might tap a wood table. And all of it feels so solid. It feels so real. But when you truly realize that it's all nothing, it becomes like a wispy hologram, like an immaterial virtual reality. It's almost like you're walking through a virtual reality, like a video game. You know, in a video game, the walls aren't real, but they still behave as though they are real walls. a hologram seems real, but actually it's sort of just empty. It's just a pure illusion. And so that's what we mean when we say reality is an illusion. It's an illusion in the sense that, yes, there's all this stuff happening here. There's all this experience, but the nature of what experience is just nothingness, rendering the entire thing just like a hologram or a virtual reality, but one that is not run inside of a computer. So it's not the same as simulation theory. And also spirit. So the reason we call it spirituality is because when you become conscious and you awaken to the fact that everything is nothing, you realize that every material thing that you used to think of as a physical object, that science told you was a physical object, all of that becomes recontextualized. See my earlier episode called Understanding Recontextualization, where I explain what that term means. Your entire experience becomes recontextualized such that you see all that physical material stuff as actually just being pure spirit, or in other words, mind. Mind with a capital M. So right now, as I'm sitting here talking to you and you're sitting there listening to me, all of this is happening inside your own mind. The walls and roof of your house and the floor that you're sitting on and the earth that is supporting you is just a figment of your own mind. But since there's nothing but your own mind, and since the mind is infinite, it's not a problem that it's all mind, because there's no alternative to mind. See, so when you have an infinite illusion, there's no way to distinguish the illusion from reality such that now you think it's real. You're lost in the reality of your own illusion. And since the illusion is total, it's absolutely total, there's no way to tell that it's an illusion, other than through a massive instantaneous awakening in which you realize the entire thing, and the entire thing gets recontextualized as the illusion that it is, completely hollow and empty, because it's nothing, nowhere, no when, no how. And that's reality in a nutshell. All right, I'm done here. Please click that like button for me and come check out actualize.org. That's my website. You will find my blog where I post exclusive videos and other resources, links, and other cool stuff that you'll get a kick out of if you enjoy my content and you want to go deeper. There you'll find the forum, which I'm very active on, and I answer lots of questions. So if you have questions about this whole process, you feel free to come ask questions on the forum. The better the questions, the more likely I am to answer them. I've answered thousands of questions there. So make use of that resource. You'll also find my book list, where you can find books that explain some of this stuff so that you don't just hear it from me, but you hear it from other experts and masters and world-class teachers. And check out my life purpose course if you want to figure out how to get your life on track in a more practical way, just beyond just the philosophy and the metaphysical stuff that I like to talk about. That's the life purpose course. All right, that's it. I'm out of here. The last thing I'll tell you is that be careful. A lot of people will naysay you on metaphysical questions. And they will tell you like, oh, you can't possibly know that. Oh, that's a waste of time. Oh, that's just philosophy. Oh, it's just abstraction. Oh, it's not practical. Beware of these people. These might be your parents, your teachers, your friends, your colleagues, people in the comments section, scientists, doctors, philosophers, theologians. It actually is possible to answer deep metaphysical questions. And not only is it possible, it's absolutely essential in order to find happiness and peace in life. The reason that most people are dissatisfied in their lives is precisely because they take a highly utilitarian, pragmatic, survival-oriented approach to life, where the only things they value is that which is tangible, material, and immediately gives them some sort of pleasure, or immediately gives them sort of material, tangible payoff. That's mostly what people value. And it's this sort of myopic, short-sighted, overly utilitarian approach to life, which leads to great dissatisfaction. Because the truth is that all this material stuff is actually an illusion. You're never going to find satisfaction that way. To find satisfaction, you need to ask deep, penetrating metaphysical and epistemic questions, and you need to work at it for years to penetrate through to the essence of what you are, life is, love is, the universe is, consciousness is. This is how you master life and how you get satisfaction. You don't get satisfaction from chasing material things. But it takes a lot of wisdom and maturity and vision to be able to see that. Most people, they need to spend a good 10, 20, 30 years of their life chasing material pleasures. And by the way, when I talk about material pleasures, I include in that all of science. See? So see, the scientists think that, oh, well, we're not chasing material pleasures. We're discovering deep truths of the universe. No, you're still chasing material pleasures of your own mind. So when a physicist is sitting there, you know, working on some advanced astrophysics problem, he's still chasing material pleasure, the material pleasure of figuring out how some particles work or whatever. That's still a material pleasure. That's still a limited, finite sort of knowledge and understanding. There's use to it. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. It can be useful. But again, just because something is useful doesn't mean it leads to deep satisfaction. It doesn't mean that it leads to any ultimate answers about the nature of reality. So see, most people are stuck chasing their tail in materialism. And then they wonder why they're not satisfied with life. Because you're missing the very essence of life. The spiritual essence of life. And spirit is nothing. So when are you going to realize that? When are you going to realize that life is nothing? And see, contrary to this being some bleak, depressing, nihilistic, problematic realization, actually, it's wonderful. It's a huge relief to realize that life is nothing and that reality is nothing. Because it's a sense of completion, it's a sense of relief. It comes with a sense of surrender and acceptance. And then what can really flow forth after that realization is love. Because love is nothing. Now you wonder, Leo, how could love be nothing? Love is not nothing. Well, that's the topic for another day. I have discussed the nature of love in other episodes. Check out my episode, What is Love Part 1 and What is Love Part 2, where I explain love in a lot more detail. Love is a very tricky and counterintuitive and paradoxical thing. It's not just a human emotion the way that most people think. Love has an existential component to it, and love is the very fabric of reality. So the beauty of realizing that life is nothing, you're not going to turn into some sort of Friedrich Nietzsche nihilist, and you're not going to turn into some sort of, you know, Sartre-esque existentialist who's always brooding and depressed and this sort of shit. It's not going to be that. Those people didn't realize that life was nothing. They were playing mind games. To truly realize that life is nothing is a huge relief. It's a spiritual epiphany. This is a spiritual epiphany. You're discovering God. This is not some sort of bleak materialistic realization where you're sitting there doing some calculations on some napkin and then you realize one day, like Einstein or something, and then you realize, like, oh, reality is nothing. And it's like, oh, that's so depressing. I want to kill myself. No. You realize it's nothing, but then you realize nothing is love. And then you realize, like, oh my God, infinity is nothing and infinity is God and God is what I am. And that blows your mind so much, it blows your whole heart open. And then you become a fountain of love. Because love is just infinity. It's an endless creative outpouring of form, which is always held within a larger meta unity. That's true love, and that's what reality is. That's what God is. That's what you are. And then from this place, you can live a great life. You can be detached. You can be easygoing. You can laugh. You can be playful. You can be lighthearted. You don't need to be afraid anymore. You don't need to be terrified of death. You don't need to worry about bad stuff happening to you. You don't need to be worried about enemies out there who are doing bad stuff to you, because it's all nothing. See, all those problems are negated when you realize the nothingness, the hollowness of life. And of course, because that goes full circle, the emptiness, which you think is just depression, that depression lifts and it turns into just joy and bliss. And that's the whole point of the spiritual path, is to realize this nothingness and then to bask in it as bliss and love. See, it goes full circle. You surrender chasing pleasures of the material realm in order to discover the higher pleasures, the divine, sublime pleasures of the spiritual realm, which is just purely nothing. And that's what bliss is. Bliss is just blissing out on nothingness. So, don't let people fool you into thinking that this is just philosophy, that these are just beliefs, that these are just an ideology. No. This is something that you make a living reality. And this is not something you brainwash yourself with, like in a cult, where you just tell yourself, oh yeah, I'm feeling positive because I'm empty and nothing. No, that's not it. You actually have to realize it. You have to awaken to it. It has to be your living, conscious reality. That's possible to do, but it takes work. And if you want to know how to do that work, then, hey, subscribe to the channel, stick around, and you'll get more content from me, which helps you to guide you in that direction.